Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If anybody would like to call in and talk to us during this period of time, please get your pencils ready. We would welcome any calls from anyone who has any questions or comments that they'd like to make. And here's our call-in number. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I'll mention that again. It's area code 646-716-4893. So first, let me welcome Misty back. I know that you were off last week, Misty.
Yeah.
So we had a number of listeners who said that they missed you. And I just wasn't good enough.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they felt like something was missing from the show. But, you know, Misty's involved with a whole new project right now. And, you know, she is exhausted. And I told her she has to come tonight anyway. I had no mercy on her. because I have no choice. You have to be on the show tonight, Misty. But
there
we will cut it a little bit shorter. And for the next few weeks, we have some really wonderful guests lined up to give Misty a break on her new endeavor, and then she'll be back with us later in the month. But, you know, I thank you for coming tonight, because people do look forward to hearing from you and your advice and the comforting words that you always have to say.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, one thing I was telling some of the women in our support chat, and, you know, the support chat's a great place to be during the holidays when so many issues do come up. And, you know, people do need support during this time of year. And it's, like, a really great place to vent. I always tell some women get on and they say, oh, it's too negative. But I always say I'd much rather you vent in our chat room than to go and vent in front of your children or to harbor, you know, anger inside and not have any place to put it. You know, meeting other women who are going through the same frustrations and the same problems, you know, it's always comforting to know that it's not you, as I tell women, it's not you.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I told them, I had spoken to my publisher that I'm planning a new book for the upcoming year. And, you know, I have a lot of information on this, and I'll be asking our listeners and our people who read my newsletter to contribute to this. But, you know, I already started the process of coming up with a new book that I think will be really important for women who just can't get proof or evidence. And it's going to be called Gay Husbands Say the Darndest Things. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a list of all of their excuses in there, you know, that they tell their wives on why they're not
That'll
gay.
That will be a very thick book.
Yeah, yeah. 10,000 pages, I think. But,
I think so.
Yeah, well, there's at least 10,000 excuses, but I'll try to condense them. But I think that when women read this and they see, oh, that's what my husband says. Oh, that's what my husband says. You know, because some of these stories are just unbelievable. And, you know, in fact, I was even looking back tonight about some of the stories. And, like, just to give you an example that, you know, it's just to me, you know, amazing how women have to listen to this. One woman wrote to me and said that, you know, her husband's obsessed with she-males. Those are men who dress up like women, but they still have penises. And says he says, because it doesn't make him gay. He says, but I am obsessed with them because you can have the best of both worlds in a woman with a penis. Okay. And then another woman had written, he told me he had an interest in man's genitals because he thought it would turn me on. Okay. Whatever. I mean, like, some of the most bizarre things come my way, and I think I've heard, like, unbelievable stories. And even in tonight in our chat room, we were talking about some of the things that men say about, well, you know, because the women emasculate them, and that's why they're gay. Or when they were younger, they had bad female interaction experiences, so that's why they're interested in men. Of course, none of them will say they're gay. They just say they have these, you know, needs to look at gay porno or men to men on Craigslist, you know. Anything but admit they're gay. And then they're angry at you when you bring it up. You know, I'll just never get it.
I don't either. I mean, it's really interesting how the dynamics of that play out. And it sounds so bizarre, you know, being a marriage and family therapist, you know, working with straight couples, those types of issues just don't come up, and it's hard to understand almost unless you've experienced it, some of these issues, and how you think, wow, that sounds so bizarre, but it's very true, and it comes up so often, and so many of them have such common threads to those excuses and what they're told. It's just very interesting how common these excuses are and some of the things that women are told, and
I've really convinced myself, I don't know if you'll agree or not, but I have convinced myself that these men don't really believe that they're gay. They are somehow able to, you know, change this way of thinking that even when they're attracted to men, even when they're having sex with men, that doesn't necessarily equate with gay.
I think you're right, especially with the group that we deal with, the men. Some of that's really compartmentalized, and I think I don't know if compartmentalized would be a good word to use it, because usually that's just separating one life from another. I do believe it's a form of compartmentalization, but the interesting part is I believe maybe sometimes they assume, and I don't know, I'm throwing this out there as an idea, but I often wonder that, and I'm like you, I think truly many of these men do not consider themselves gay or think that they're gay, because possibly they just have such an emotional connection with their wife or with women, and that's their part of, you know, trying to remain in the straight world. And because if they don't have emotional ties with men, that, you know, a lot of times it is just sex. So, you know, I often wonder if that's part of them telling themselves, okay, well, I emotionally love my wife, sexually, I can't perform. You know, and they just somehow separate that too. I don't know, but I'll often wonder that, if that's part of, you know, how that plays out.
I'm not sure either. I just know that, you know, there's so many different variations of this,
mm-hmm.
and I could just really respect a man who can just say, look, you know, I work with a lot of them too, trust me. I say, go tell your wife. Tell her that, you know, you weren't sure what it was. You knew you had feelings. You know, tell her the truth. You know, you don't have to tell her the details. But, you know, tell her the truth that you thought you could make this work. You thought if you loved her enough, these feelings would go away, but they haven't. And I said, you owe her the truth. And, you know, that's my whole thing. I can understand how this stuff happens, and I do believe these men do love their wives when they go into these marriages. But if you love your wife, how do you do this to her? How do you make her go through life thinking every day that she's imagining things, that, you know, there's something wrong with her, that it's her behavior that's causing you to do these irrational things? I mean, where does this come from? You know, this is beyond compartmentalizing. I mean, I know what you're saying, but these guys are really cruel. You know, they're really hurting their wives by doing this. And they seem not to have any kind of, you know, they're also worried, I don't want to tell my wife the truth because I don't want to hurt her. Okay, so it's better for her to live every day wondering why you don't want to touch her, wondering why, you know, she feels like she's not worthy of being a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you don't really want to be with her, so you find, you know, 101 reasons why you don't want to be with her, none of which are legitimate. There's only one reason. It's because she's a woman and you're gay. But, you know, you're so afraid that she's going to be hurt if she finds out the truth. I mean, I don't understand that. But a lot of people tell me that.
I don't either. I think somehow they do use it as, in their mind, a form of protection, as you just described, which it's really a false sense of protection because, you know, that woman is always wondering. I've been in those shoes. Always wondering, because there's always that missing piece of the puzzle. You don't know what's going on. You know something's going on. You don't know what it is until you figure it out.
It's very sad to me that so many people have to sit and have such a complicated life. Like, we have some women in our support chat I mean, my heart goes out to these women. They're married 25, 30, 40 years.
I know.
40 years that you lived a lie with someone. And for 40 years, you know, you couldn't understand what's wrong in your marriage and why your husband's not happy. For 40 years, he's not touching you.
Right, right. And the biggest problem I have with it is this. The person that knows that, you know, no matter how they want to identify themselves as, if they know that they can't love their wife as a wife, and that means sexually and all the above, you know, everything, whole, you know, love her completely and love her whole for everything she is. If they can't do that because, they, you know, they want to say they're curious or they're bi or whatever it is that they need to call it, the biggest problem I have with it is they're making the decision of what they think is best for their wife by not telling them. They're taking away that freedom of choice for that wife. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, let her decide what's best for her. Don't take away that part of it. You know, put the truth in it. You know, because the truth, you know, I truly believe truth will set you free in this sort of situation. Let the wife decide. Do I want to stay or do I want to leave? You know, that person, I don't think it's fair that person to say, okay, I'm going to make the call here. I'm not going to tell her, and I'm going to make the decision. It's better for her not to know and stay with me.
And you know what? It's really interesting that, you know, since you mentioned that, I had a man who I was corresponding with all week, and, you know, of course, he's saying he's not gay. He just has homosexual fantasies, urges, and looks at gay porn. But he insists it's because of a traumatizing sexual experience he had as a youngster. And, you know, I never thought about this before, but, you know, I came up with this finally. It took me, you know, all these years. But you know how so many of gay husbands say that they were sexually molested as children, and
mm-hmm.
that's why they're gay, which I call it, you know, the abuse excuse, because I don't believe that in many cases. I think it's an excuse that gay men use who get married so that their wives will feel sympathetic to them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like when he said that to me and I said to him, well, let me ask you this question. You know, I don't understand this kind of thinking that you were abused as a youngster in a homosexual way and that's why you're attracted to men. I said, that's the same to me that if a woman was violated and raped by a man, let's say, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of women are,
mm-hmm.
when she gets older, is she going to want to get involved with somebody in an S&M scene? I mean, is that mm-hmm. going to be her fantasy now, that she feels turned on by being raped?
Mm-hmm.
And does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I've always wondered that in my mind. How can that be so... You know, it's horrible when a child or anyone, child and or adult, is taken advantage of sexually against their will. It's horrible, absolutely horrible. However, like you just said, I just don't know how the two go together.
No,
you know,
I don't
someone
really,
saying,
I don't understand
it. That. I don't
and,
either.
You know, and before I couldn't compare it because I would say, well, when a girl is molested by a man, well, that doesn't make her turn to women. You know, so I couldn't quite equate it, but then I figured this one out, you know, that if a woman is, you know, raped in a violent way,
mm-hmm.
because that's how I look at it with men who are saying, well, they were molested when they were younger. Well, they were molested and enjoyed it, and that made them gay? Or they were saying it was a terrible thing, they were molested, but that's why they have these feelings. Then why aren't girls who were raped, you know, have the feeling, oh, I want to have some guy... you know, beat me and chain me down and rape me. They don't have rape fantasies, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it just doesn't quite, you know, click for me.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I really don't. I've never understood that. I just
but more importantly, I told
together.
Him, you know, at least you owe it to your wife to go and talk to her, you know, because he says he definitely does not want to be gay. This is not his orientation. He just thinks he doesn't want to have sex with his wife either because it's really difficult for him. But he feels that, you know, that if, you know, that could change. And he went to a minister, and a minister told him, you know, he needs to pray. So he finally got back to me a couple days ago, and he said that he really appreciates all that I did for him. you know, he did tell his wife, and she said that this is something, now that he's been honest, that they can work with. You know, and they're going to go for counseling with a Christian minister so they can work this out. And so those feelings will go away.
Wow.
And I said to him, well, I'm really glad that you have this wrapped up neatly in a little box. And, you know, if I could be of help to you in the future, let me know. And he wrote back that he thought I was being condescending to think it's wrapped up in a box. He knows it's going to be a hard struggle. So I, you know, told him I didn't mean it quite that simply. But, you know, the thing is that it is going to be a struggle because people cannot change their sexual orientation. I mean, I'm not saying they don't try. But, I mean, how do you stop thinking about this when this is what you are? I don't get it.
Well, how that makes sense in my mind is, I don't know how I could make myself a lesbian. So
I don't either.
How a man that is gay and has gay tendencies can make themselves straight. I just can't imagine what a horrible life that would have to be to try to live that. Not that, you know, gay people or lesbians are horrible. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, I don't think I could alter my gender of who I prefer sexually. I just can't imagine that. You know, because my preference is men. I'm attracted to men. I'm not attracted to women.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how I could turn that off, you know. And I just don't know how men do that. You know, my heart goes out to people that feel like they have to do that and feel like that they can't be who they are. I can't imagine that life. It has to be just so hard.
I know, and that's why I say, you know, my mantra is life was never meant to be this complicated, and I mean it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
This is not what life was supposed to be. Nobody was supposed to have all these kind of complexities and problems and issues and going to bed crying at night. You know, I tell women, when you go to bed crying at night, there is a problem.
Absolutely.
I mean, that should tell you in itself, even if you have no proof of anything, the proof that you're going to bed crying at night, it's proof that you're not happy. I mean, you don't have to prove anything else except that you're not happy being in a relationship. And I don't know why our women, more so than any other women I know, have to hang in there trying to make something work that's just not working and feel that it's their failure when,
mm-hmm.
you know, they've done nothing wrong and everything right, and they just, you know, buy into all these men who are emotionally manipulating them into thinking that it's their fault.
I know. It's really sad.
Did you go through that in your marriage?
Whoa. I was the queen of that. Are you kidding? Not only did I go through that, I was the queen of everything being my fault. I mean, it's just like, you know,
But did you believe it?
Absolutely. Not in the beginning, but, you know, I heard it so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I started believing everything. It was just a slow form of death for me. I you know, the spirit of me died, and all of the, I'm not good enough, I cause this, I do that, just grew. That's what grew. And everything became my fault. You know, I didn't cook good enough, I didn't smell good enough, you know, I didn't fold literally did not fold the towels correctly. Didn't have the things organized in the pantry well. If only I would keep the house clean enough. If I would put the dishes in the dishwasher the correct way. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I could create a whole list of things.
Mm-hmm.
And those things, if only those things were right and I did those things right, then he would want me. But how could he want me for someone that didn't know how to fold towels correctly and that couldn't even load a dishwasher right? I mean, for crying out loud, why would you want someone sexually if they couldn't do those two things? So it's bizarre what human behavior can do, you know,
mm-hmm.
after you've lived it. Well, it's like Stockholm Syndrome. You know, when someone
Can you explain that a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah, and I think sometimes we being kidnapped is horrible, but, you know, in Stockholm Syndrome, what happens is, you know, like this person can capture or kidnap a child or an adult, and once they have them long enough, you can literally brainwash someone to where that the person that's kidnapped sort of allies with the person doing the crime, and they look after that person, and that person has got this them believing that they're protecting them, they are doing this for their own benefit, they are out to help them, they're out to save them, they're out to, you know, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person that's kidnapped, you know, once you're beaten down enough, eventually you usually start believing it, to where that the person, I mean, so many studies, like after the captor has had the person kidnapped for so long, even when, like, there's guards let down, I mean, like, there's more freedom, the person won't even run away.
Right, and I think you're too young to remember this for sure, because you're too young. But when I was growing up, they had the whole case with Patty Hearst. Do you remember
hearing
about
that? I
haven't
read the story. I don't remember it, but I've read the story. Uh-huh.
Right, and, you know, this is typical of it. Patty Hearst grew up during my generation back in the 60s or 70s. And she was kidnapped by a group called the Symbionese Liberation Army out in California. And they kept her locked up in a closet for 40 days in a dark closet. They didn't let her out. They were screaming all kinds of things because her father owned the Hearst newspapers. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, through fear and brainwashing, you know, she became one of them. And she was involved. She went with them to a bank, you know, and robbed a bank and, in fact, went to jail for that. And, of course, in her defense, you know, they brought up, you know, about the fact she was brainwashed and, you know, the fear of it all. And they brought up the fact, well, she had an opportunity to leave. You know, when she robbed that bank, she could have told people, I'm being kidnapped and this and that. But after a while, you just, can you explain that part again?
Yeah, you know, after you've lived in an environment, that's what I describe it as an environment. When you've lived in an environment that strips you away of who you are, and that person builds you up to believe, you know, that they ally with you. They know what to do. They're such manipulators. Like, you know, they'll bring you little things. Like, they'll starve you for so long and then bring you some food. Well, see, look what I'm doing for you. I'm helping keeping you alive. I'm protecting you. Or even like a child, if it's a child, it might be easier to understand with a child. You know, a 4 to 5 year old, you can tell anything. Well, your parents didn't want you. This would be an example. Your parents were going to hurt you, so I come to save you, and I'm going to help you, and I want you to live, and I don't want them to hurt you. Well, that child's going to be distraught for a while. They're going to cry and scream and kick. But after so long, that person's going to win the trust of that child. They're going to bring them candy. They're going to bring them, you know, just different things. See, look what I'm doing for you. You know, I'm doing this for you to protect you, so you need to stay with me because those are mean people. They're going to do something to you. And it's just really bizarre how the mind, after so long, really can be flipped and switched into what does become. It can be, you know, labeled as Stockholm Syndrome, to where that you believe the person that is holding you, they don't even have to hold you against your will anymore. You'll stay.
Mm-hmm.
Because you become to believe they are there to protect you, and they are there to help you, and you believe that anything that goes wrong is your fault. And the things that, you know, happen wrong, you're the one to blame. So it's
and I see that happens to so many of our women who were you know, sometimes really strong women. I can speak for myself. You know, I was a really strong woman when I went into my marriage, but I married somebody who was much stronger than I was.
Absolutely.
And,
I can identify with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wasn't a kid. I wasn't 20. I didn't have a good excuse. You know, it wasn't my first marriage, and I was a very strong woman. But it didn't take long until I became somebody who I didn't even know anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I just lived in a state of existence, waking up every day, going through the day, feeling numb because, you know, I was afraid to feel anything after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, tonight we were talking in our chat room also about women fantasizing, you know, that sometimes it's healthy to fantasize, you know, terrible things. But, I mean, I used to fantasize about either, you know, different ways to kill my ex-husband, you know, which isn't very nice, I know, and I wasn't really fantasizing. I was really trying to plot it out and how I could do it without getting caught and go to jail and, you know, not have my children. But when your life gets to that point where you don't see a way out, you know, where... I tell women, it's not as hard as you think. You can walk out a door. You know, you have 2 feet that can take you out that door. You just mm-hmm. feel that you can't go. You feel so stuck. And
right.
you feel that, you know what you have inside that wall, but you don't know when you walk out of there. And especially when you've been told that you're not able to do anything right and that you're never going to make it on your own. You know, you can rob someone of their, you know, sense of who they are. It doesn't take long to do that. You know,
exactly.
somebody who wants to sit and belittle you and make you feel inadequate. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're fed a steady diet of constant negativity, of constant things to bring your self-esteem, not even to zero, but to negative, you know, a negative number. Excuse me. But when you're fed that steady diet over a period of time, you lose confidence in everything. I literally couldn't make even a decision what to cook for dinner. I couldn't make a decision on, well, you know, maybe should I go to the store or should I ask him? I mean, it sounds so crazy.
It does make me. It sounds really crazy. Unfortunately, I was in the same boat, so, you know, as crazy as it sounds, I did the same thing. I was afraid to make my own decisions for anything, including
yes.
what to make for dinner. What if he doesn't like it? What if he just says,
worry, he's going to complain about it, whether
right.
he likes it or not,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So, you know, why make things work?
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, do you even ask, you know, what to buy, what to get, what do you want? Just always trying to make things better. It never did. It never did. Always trying to make the pancake more round and more perfect. Guess what? It doesn't happen.
And even if it does happen, you know, they're not going to acknowledge it, and that's the whole thing. You can keep running
that's
around in circles
about.
like
mm-hmm.
you call dancing in the circle of crazy. But the truth
yeah.
of the reality is that you're just in that circle and you're never getting out of it.
Mm-mm.
You're just going to keep dancing around and around, and no matter how you feel, you know, whenever you're looking for praise, you know, it's like a very strong passive-aggressive behavior. Sometimes we'll give you a little praise just to keep you hanging in there.
Absolutely.
And then you keep thinking, well, maybe I'm making them happier today. Maybe if I try even harder, I can make them even more happy tomorrow because they're so unhappy all the time, right?
Exactly. It's like, you know, throw the dog a small bone, and then
exactly.
the wag tail, and, you know, and it's just so sad. It's such a cycle. It's such a vicious cycle. And, you know, like you said, it's so easy. You just take those two legs and walk out.
But it seems so hard when you're living through it, and especially with children. I mean, it's hard under all circumstances, but when you have kids and they're threatening you, you know, we have women who are, their husbands are telling them, well, I'm going to file for custody and you're not going to have the kids. And I tell them in most cases it's really a big bluff. I mean, because they weren't really good fathers to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're not going to look to be good fathers now. You know, they don't want the responsibility because, you know, that's not to say there aren't wonderful gay fathers. There certainly are. But the ones who are absentee fathers who are threatening all the time, I say, well, let them go for it. Let them get custody. Let them keep the child for a few weeks and see how fast they're going to give it, you know, the baby back.
Absolutely.
You know, they don't have no concept of what it is to raise children because they're not even home. They're absentee parents in many cases,
mm-hmm.
you know, because their world is just revolving around them. But, you know, they'll manipulate you, and that's why women are very fearful. You know, they're afraid to leave because they're afraid they're not only going to lose their marriage, they're going to lose their children as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with older children, a lot of times these men will say, well, your mother's the one causing the problem. She's making up all these stories. And we're going to have to be a broken family because your mother doesn't want to live with me because, you know, she has her own issues and she's making it my fault. So it's not uncommon. You know, I've had many women tell me that their older children blame them for the divorce. You know, and they'll side with the father because, you know, he's manipulating them to feel sorry for him.
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, that's not what this is about at all. It's still a control issue.
Yep.
Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. Not only a control issue, but more of a, how can I word this? You know, absolutely, there's control in there. And also, more of an, even more so, I think even an ally is what I think of. It's just like, you know, they want someone on their team. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
be on my team. I want you to see they're wrong and I'm right. You know, there's nothing wrong with being gay, but there's something wrong when you're living in a lie and telling someone else you're someone that you can't be. You know, that's a problem. And don't, you know, turn your children against your spouse on either side. You know, that's not any pain from the marriage. It's not the child's burden to bear. I don't care if it's a young child or a teenager or a young adult. You know, no child needs to bear the responsibility of the pain from that marriage or relationship. And unfortunately, you know, it happens often. And that's just, that's such no good. You know, it really is. I mean, there should not be a team, see as a team, and either you're on one side or the other side.
You know,
child,
especially when it comes to parents. You know, and I think that's why I tell the women, come and vent in the chat room, because I'd rather you do it with me than for you to say bad things, you know, about your ex-husband in front of the children. And even though you may be 1,000% valid in what you're saying, you know, the point is that children are made up of two different parents. And the more you knock their father, you know, they look at it as a personal affront against them because they're halfway made up with their father.
Absolutely.
And I just know that it always backfires. You know, the one who gets hurt the most in those situations are the children.
Yep.
They're the ones who feel very torn, put in the middle. They don't want to have to turn on one parent. And I know it's difficult because we, you know, we feel like when we're going through this, we have no allies. But the children are not supposed to be your allies. The children are your children. You know, you need friends or support systems or a therapist. They can be your allies. Would you say that's true, Miss Faye?
Absolutely. Go to your support system. And children do not belong on your support system. You know, who is your support system? That, you know, the go-to list of who you go to. I always tell women, you need to have at least 5 support systems. Because when you need someone, when you're in need, every person listed on there is not going to be available. You know, whether it be a person, whether it be a friend, whether it be a professional, you know, have friends, family, professionals, like as in therapist, and all these people listed on this, or professionals, should be someone that has your best interest at heart, not someone that you don't trust as having your best interest. And you need to always have that go-to list. That's who you go to. And, you know, it's okay to vent. It really is. It's healthy to be angry and to use that angry. Anger can really pull you through a lot of the depression, I feel, that's associated with, you know, the discovery period. But you have to use the anger in a healthy manner. And, you know, don't use anger to lash out at your spouse in front of your children. You know, if you need to vent, find a support group. You know, come online, vent online. There's nothing wrong with venting. I mean, it's healthy, but I don't think it's healthy to do it with the children.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think that, you know, one of the things I want to really focus on this year are the kids. And, you know, I put a notice in my last newsletter asking people if they have adult children, you know, who'd be interested in forming some kind of support. I think we have really underrated how these marriages affect, you know, children in their formative years, in their adult relationships with people. I mean, I've heard from these kids and, you know, how it's really hurt them as far as trusting in their own relationships, you know, or being caught in the middle of the lies with their parents, and do they feel the sense of loyalty to their mother? You know, if they tell her something, then it's going to break up the marriage, it's going to be their fault. You know, I think that children have so much to deal with, and we've really underestimated this, and there really is nowhere for children to go. You know, some people suggest, you know, they should go to this organization called Collage, which I think is a wonderful organization, but it's primarily for kids who have two gay parents, you know, and finding other children with similar or the same. And, you know, I think it's a great resource to have, but our kids don't really have a resource.
Yeah,
and a lot of them,
yeah,
I think, don't want to talk about it. They don't want to have to deal with it. I know for sure my kids never really wanted to deal with it. You know, they just wanted to try to avoid it or ignore it. But it definitely does take its impact and toll on kids, you know, as they're growing into adulthood, I think.
I think so, too. I think it influences them. Well, any relationship, you know, children learn about relationships from their parents. That's where they learn about relationships. Whether their parent be gay, straight, whatever their parent be, that's where they learn about relationships. And when they get involved and start noticing these things and they, you know, they're involved in the middle of all this stuff, which you may think you're hiding stuff very well from your children, quite possibly you're doing a decent job, but children are very intuitive. They know when things are going on. They know when things are not right. They can sense it. They can feel it. They can smell it. Whatever word you want to use in there, they can tell. Things are not just right. And that's where they learn how to, all about relationships and what they will accept in a partner, what they won't accept in a partner, what they may settle for, what they won't settle for, their likes, their dislikes. That's where they learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's from, you're modeling that to your child. You're modeling a relationship to your child, whether you realize it or not, and it's very important. It's very formative years for that child. And when that child, you know, decides to choose a partner or a mate, they're going to choose someone that probably plays out many of the same dynamics that they saw growing up.
I know. I just feel so bad because I just feel there's so many complications that arise in all these relationships. And I think that it doesn't have to be this way. I think that, you know, if men could just be honest about the situation and try to explain to their wives and be there for them, not feel like they're their enemy on top of it. You know, not say, I'm going to fight you in court and I'm going to take everything you have, or, you know, I want you to pay me alimony out of your, you know, pension fund. I mean, come on, let's be for real. You know what? You screwed up. You got married. You're gay. Maybe you couldn't accept it. Maybe you didn't want to deal with it. But believe me, this marriage is not falling apart because of any other reason. It's falling apart because you're gay. And be good about it. Do the right thing. Say to your wife, look, you know, I'm really sorry. I tried my best. You know, I love you. It's just not working out because I'm gay. But I will be there for you. I will give you the emotional support you need. I will give you the financial support you need. I will be there for the children. I will be there to help you. I'm not going to fight you for custody. You know, let's see what we can do to share the children and raising them. You know, at least I feel like they would take that approach. A lot of women would be very willing to do that. Don't you think so?
I absolutely think so. I've worked with a few women that have, you know, gone through processes such as that, and it's beautiful when you can get to that point. And I've also worked with women that have a therapist with their husband as they're going through divorce, which I think is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So therapists are not just there to try to put things back together. There's also therapists out there that can help you untangle things as you dissolve the marriage, and that, you know, that will help you do that in a manner that will be easier on your children and be easier on yourself. For both parties,
mm-hmm.
both sides. You know, it's not just about putting the marriage back together. It's about, you know, where do I go from here? How do we dissolve this in a way that's human to each other, in a way that won't hurt the children? You know, and you know, the path that, you know, what path can we take that the children will be harmed less, or, you know, what can we show them, you know, to be, what can we do that's of integrity as parents and still hold it together and make sure these children know that we love them. You know, things are going to be different now, but we still love them and we're going to be decent, civil human beings to each other. I mean, how great a story is that? Few and far in between.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to talk about a few tips, not, you know, like as far as being parents and stuff for the holidays. And, you know, I've read a lot of different articles about this, and I just want to get your opinion on a few of these, Misty.
Okay.
And, you know, because this is a really tough time for our women. You know, I think that the holidays for a lot of people are tough, but when you're in flux or you're getting to ready to move on, or you've just moved on, or you've moved on in the last year or two, or the family's all disjointed, you know, there's so many different things that, and issues that you weren't counting on that all of a sudden are there. And I know it's really hard, but there are some tips, you know, that you should really think about. And in the upcoming weeks, you know, I'm going to have Maggie on with us, and she's really great at, you know, working with couples and giving tips about, you know, how to change plans around also. And next week, Grace is going to be my guest. We're going to be really talking about different self-esteem issues. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be talking a lot about stuff for during the holidays, the things that will be helping. But, you know, a few tips that I've been reading from one article, you know, it says, like, put the kids first. And, you know, first of all, remember that the holidays are not all about you, that your children deserve their celebrations, even if you feel cheated out of yours. Encourage them to have a blast with the other parent, even if you can't stand the prospect of being alone. Do you think that's good?
Yes, I think there should be some, I don't like that there's not some equality mentioned in there, but I think a child should have a blast with both parents, you know.
Yeah, I think we'll go on later with that. It says, okay. Get into the spirit of the season. This is the time of giving, forgiving, and fresh starts. And, you know, it says this is the year. It says, turn Scrooge's emotional lessons about holiday, past, present, and yet to come into New Year's resolutions about letting go of anger and treasuring what you do have despite all you have lost. And I think, you know, there's some truth to that. You know, anger is really important, but there comes a point where you have to, you know, work it through and get ready to move on. You don't want to just harbor anger, because in time that'll become bitterness. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think that depends, which this isn't going dead. It also depends, where are you at in your anger? Is this just a phase that just started? If it is, okay. If it's not, you know, ask yourself, you know, how's this serving me at this time? Can I let it go? Can I let some of it go? You know, if it's something that you've not experienced and you're beginning to experience, be grateful for. I say be grateful for your anger.
Mm-hmm.
Do it in a healthy way.
I think so, too, because I always feel like anger is fighting back, you know, that you're taking your life back. As long as you don't keep hanging on to it and you can't move past it and you're just stuck there.
Right. I think anger is a beautiful thing to pull you out from the depression that goes along with this. You know,
mm-hmm.
I love it when I work with women and I see that spark of anger starting. I mean, it's a gift. Anger truly
mm-hmm.
is a gift when a woman is so down and out and depressed, and you see that spark of anger starting, that usually helps propel them on to get some movement going on and get to another level of healing. You know, anger doesn't mean you do destructive things. I think our society has just mislabeled anger so bad and given it such a bad name. I mean, anger is very healthy, depending on what you do.
This step I think is good, too. Love means far more than money. You know, a lot of times women are really strapped when they become single parents and they feel bad because, you know, they just don't have the money to buy their kids a million things. There's so many inexpensive activities you can do for kids to make the holidays meaningful, whether
Absolutely.
It's baking together, whether it's making
mm-hmm.
craft things together, putting up a tree and decorating it together, decorating the house with inexpensive decorations. I mean, I don't feel that parents should have to feel, well, they're at a loss because they can't afford to buy the same things for their kids now that they're split up.
Absolutely. I think it's the little things that make up such a great holiday. It's those things, those little traditions that you want to continue, whether it be, you know, decorating, you know, that shouldn't cost anything if you already have the decorations, you know, all those little rituals going around the holiday and what that includes does not have to include expensive gifts. It really doesn't.
Right, because even this says the holidays are not a competition with your ex or for your children. Teach your children the true meaning of the holiday, not the meaninglessness of materialism. And that's really true. I mean, you know, that's not what the holidays are supposed to be about. Of course, it's become that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you feel bad when your husband come up with big, lavish gifts, and you can't. I know I used to feel that way. But, you know, I had to support them all the other weeks of the year, so I didn't have that kind of money to buy them the lavish presents. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and years later, believe me, they didn't remember who bought them what.
Right.
So I would, you know, stress that part out.
Yeah, I remember things I did with my parents. I don't remember gifts I got. You know,
mm-hmm.
my parents still together. You know, it wasn't a divorce or anything. You know, didn't go through that part of it. But just thinking back, you know, that question really brought things back in my mind. I remember fun things we would do, but I don't necessarily remember gifts.
Mm-hmm. One that you were very big on, Misty, you established tradition, new traditions with your children, even new ones that may be off time or different from past rituals. Your kids may not remember the details of every year, but year in, year out, traditions will stay with them for a lifetime.
Absolutely. I think it's
so. Can you give people some ideas on what some of these new traditions might be?
Absolutely. Sit down with your family and come up with ideas, brainstorm what suits your family, what does your family like to do. You know, some of this may depend on what your budget is. Because something, you know, because being realistic, things do cost money. But, you know, like if you want to start a new tradition, I'm all for starting new traditions. Because it's so symbolic of, I feel, moving forward and starting a new life of who you are and who you're becoming and what you're turning into. And, you know, new traditions can include anything from, if the holidays were usually spent at your home, don't host it this year. You know, start, you know, get on the phone, find someone else in the family that will host it. You may can help them host it, but don't do it at your home. You know, change it around and don't make it too much on yourself. Go, let it be a different home. Let it be someone else's home. You know, change that around. Some people, I've worked with some women that they, you know, of course you have to have consent. You have children to do this, but they go on a vacation or a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
They go away. And, I mean, I think that's great. You go on a cruise or go on a three-day weekend or just somewhere out of town to do something. And, of course, that's one, something on the higher end of whatever you want to spend. But it's, you know, if you're used to, if you live in a cold climate, go to the warm climate. Live in a warm climate, go to the cold climate. You know, do something fun with your family if you can afford that. That's a great way to start a new tradition. Another thing can just be volunteer somewhere. If you don't have the money to get out of town and you want to do something as a family, call around. Give service to someone else that needs it. And it really feels good to do that. To be, because we as humans, we like to feel useful and helpful sometimes. And especially generally.
Yeah, I think that by giving, it really makes people feel better. I know that, you know, when I was younger, I used to volunteer at a hospital like once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would volunteer more than that, but especially during the holiday times, you know, people were really lonely, and being
that's
in a hospital during a holiday and having people come visit them, and
absolutely,
you know, you can make little gifts that you can give to people that don't have to cost any
they're
money.
So grateful.
You know,
I mean,
little arts and crafts stuff, right?
And there's so many towns now, and I love, as an artist, because I'm an artist too, there's so many towns that have recycle centers where you can go and get things for art projects for free if you call your local recycle center. And you can make such cute holiday ornaments or just some type of little gift out of those things if you don't want to spend much money. And it's just so neat to do that. I mean, go to a nursing home. Do you know how many lonely people there are in a nursing home?
Mm-hmm. And they love
so
younger people and children. And
yeah,
a lot of them let you bring pets in, right?
Yes, there's a huge movement in the pet therapy. You know, if you've got a well-behaved pet and the pet has taken, you know, therapy classes and you've taken them with them, it's just so neat. They love it. I mean, of course, you need to call ahead of time, but call your local nursing home or just some place where you can volunteer, be of service, and just, you know, give up your time. And you will feel so much, so rewarded for it because there's so many people. And let me tell you, if you call, I'm going to use a nursing home again, and you just speak to someone, they'll be able to tell you the ones that don't have family, the ones that never have visits, and go to those people. Give up your time and, you know, take your children with you. You teach them a lesson as well. You know, make a batch of cookies or take a candy cane. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. Or just, you know, take an ornament, just whatever it is. And it's just such a time of giving, and in that gift you also receive, and you'll just feel so much better for it.
And you know what, I know that you and I both you know, in our own ways, you know, we work on helping people in their healing process mm-hmm. and donate our times with the radio show. And, of course, if there was nothing in it for us, then we wouldn't keep doing it, but it makes us feel good knowing that we're able to help other people. And,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, we do this every Sunday night, come hell or high water, no matter how tired we are. And it makes us feel good knowing that people are out there listening. Several thousand people listen to every show each week because I get the stats. And, you know, so I know it's really meaningful from the letters that you send us. But the point is that we get out of it knowing that we're helping you in your healing process. And just the way we feel is the way you're going to feel when you help other people as well. Because helping people is the greatest way to, you know, do your own healing and to feel good about things that you're doing as far as building up your self-esteem again. You know, you may not have heard that you did anything right from your ex-husband, but trust me, when you go into a hospital or a nursing home, if you go into a children's hospital or you go into where the elderly are, you're going to have lots of people telling you how wonderful you are. And that has to make you feel good. You know, you'll start realizing that all those terrible things aren't true. That, you know, there's wonderful things about you. And I think that it helps you build up yourself, not just, you know, give back, but also feel good.
It builds up so much confidence in yourself of who you are. And, you know, just fills that cup and runs it over full of love and just helps you give and give and give. And because you'll receive so much in rewards of doing it. Service. You know, if whether it can be something so simple as if the person is a, you know, if they believe in Christmas, for example, you know, just find a simple Christmas book. Read a story to someone that you know, because a lot of the elderly can't see it anymore. And, you know, if they just hear that Christmas story or just something that they can just associate with, they love it. I mean, it's worth $1 million to them. I mean, it's just, I've seen people, you know, volunteer at just different places myself and just doing some of the simple thing, reading some poetry. You would thought that the person had won the lottery because they couldn't read it anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you can even bake some cookies and bring them there, you know, give them out to the patients, you know, just to feel, you know, they feel so isolated and alone. A lot of people go to hospitals or they're in nursing homes. They have no visitors. They have nobody who cares about them. You know, it's just the nature of our society today that people feel really isolated. And just giving back on a special day or during a special season can make a difference in so many ways, not just for you, but also for them.
Absolutely. It's a world of difference. It'll make a difference in that person's, not only that person's day, that person's year, that person's life, you know, it'll be something they'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to volunteer, that's fine too. But do something that's fun for you. You know, plan something that you enjoy and something that you like. And, you know, it's funny, in my last newsletter, you know, I wrote to people, you're entitled to have a pity party for yourself. You know, everybody's entitled to it. You don't want to dwell on it for days. But, you know, if you want to take one day and just feel bad for yourself, and actually, you know, like last year, I felt really bad at holiday time. And I sent out in my email, people could send me cookies. And, wow, that was really overwhelming and, you know, really wonderful. Even your cookies were really exceptional, Misty. I'll never forget them.
Well,
but my point is that, you know, people do all kinds of things. You know, whatever it takes to make yourself happy. If you want to feel sorry for yourself, you're entitled. You know, and go have a big hot fudge sundae, or some people like to drink, whatever it is. I'm not a drinker, I'm an eater. But, you know, you want to go and get drunk or get a little high, you know, that's fine too. You know, you're entitled to it. Whatever
it
takes to get you through.
Do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if it feels good, do it. Whatever it takes to get through the holiday. You know, that's the important thing, is that you have to get through this time. Things will start getting back to normal, like in 6-7 weeks from now, maybe.
Yeah. Just in time for Valentine's Day, and then you crash again. But at least you're
I'm counting Valentine's Day, yeah. But after Valentine's Day, we're good for like 9 months, right?
I know, you're home for a year.
I mean, I don't get too
time.
Emotional over Flag Day or over, you know,
no.
Memorial Day. Those aren't really trigger holidays for me. But all the other ones, starting with Thanksgiving and moving on, they still trigger these, you know, feelings.
Yeah.
for me, even now in life.
It really is. Yeah, it's a rough few months.
And, you know, I have so much to be grateful for, but I still feel, you know, down and out. So I can only imagine so many other people feeling the same way. So the important thing is not to feel that it's not normal, not to feel that, you know, there's something wrong with you. These are the normal holiday blues, and in the upcoming weeks we'll be talking about some ways to get past them. And we're just going to end our show tonight by, you know, telling all of you that there's lots of support that's available to you during this holiday time. We have our online support chat 3 times a week. It was really nice on Thanksgiving. We were, you know, I was there and some women came who were having a rough time that day. And we have support chat every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. So if you're interested in joining me and some really exceptionally wonderful women, please write to me at bonkaye@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Also, I have my newsletters. If you're not receiving them and you would like to get them, just write to me and I'll be happy to put you on that list. Listen to our back shows. You know, we have archive shows, you know, from the last 3 years since we've been doing this. So you can just sit all day and listen to our back shows. We've had some wonderful guests and good advice from people. And some really wonderful, comforting people like Dr. Hooper, Brian Hooper, who will be back with us again in a few weeks. So, you know, there's support available. You just have to reach out for it. Write to me, and I'll be happy to set you up with it. Get a copy of my new book, Doom Grooms, that's available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble right now. And that's a really excellent holiday book to make you feel better about yourself and understand why your marriage didn't work. And why these men are just never going to be able to be the husbands that you need. And it's a lot of interviews from gay men also who tried their best, but it just didn't work, to give you insight as to what they were feeling, but the complexities of the women and all the hurt that they had to go through as well. So I think that you can always find my books on my website at gayhusbands.com. There's a tab for Bonnie Kaye, you know, for my library of books. Or you can go to BonnieKBooks.com and find them there. But the important thing is to feel connected, to not feel like you're alone. Even though you may be alone, you're not really alone, because there's always somebody out there who's willing to reach out. And starting with us, we're going to be there for you. So, Misty, I hope you have a wonderful couple of weeks. We'll be thinking of you and talking about you each Sunday night till you get back.
Thank you. Thank you. And you're the same. I'll miss everyone. I'll send my extra love to everyone tonight and good night and love to everybody. And I'll see you all or hear you all, or you'll hear me, I guess I should say, in just a little while.
All right. Thank you, Misty. You know I love you. And love to all of our listeners. And I'll be back with you next week. And have a great week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.